This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
You have to clap.
No, just don't bend over. We're good. Hold on.
We started.
Welcome to Business Success Tips, the most exciting, thrilling, and fantastic podcast on the planet about business. And yes. Tonight we have...
Can I hire you as my play-by-play announcer
Absolutely.
For my videos?
That's right.
Okay. Hey, this is our first video episode.
That's right. So, I've got to look good.
So if you're listening on audio, hopefully... By the time you're listening to this, but probably not, it will be on iTunes in a video format.
And we may have to pay extra for it. We don't know.
Oh, that's true. We're not sure.
What's twice free?
Well, we should give one away for free, or like a bunch away for free, and then save it. Yeah. So we'll figure.
Let's figure out if people like the way we look before we start charging them.
Yeah, we have great. Yeah, they say we have great faces for radio.
Radio, so that's right.
Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, we are filming. We're playing around.
We can't have any fat people on the show.
What is that? That's discriminatory. Whoa. So we like gain weight. You're gonna have a scale there.
That's right. Like that's right. Well, you know what Lisa wants to do? She goes, you know, she's really into fitness, right? My wife. And so she thinks when you get on an airplane, that they should charge you personally for your weight. So you should, anything past your normal weight should be so much a pound. And when you get on an airplane,
I actually, you know, I have to say I support that. Having sat next to some of the people I've had to sit next to on planes. I mean, like when it gets ridiculous, like I would give them, like, you know, morbidly obese, you have to start paying, right? I mean, it's not like if you're like 10 pounds overweight, but yeah, if you're ridiculously fat.
She thinks we don't.
Unless you have like a thyroid
According to her, I don't know if it's true or not, you could give me a comment. She thinks you can comment about people that are smoking, that that's a bad thing, but you can't call somebody fat. You can say, is smoking good for your health? Like, some, you know, that's an okay thing because you're trying to help them. Right. But if you look at somebody and go, aren't you fat? Shouldn't you go on a diet? That's not cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she believes that in time, after they find out, they've already found out most of that, that what is it, being 15 pounds? She went out, being 15 pounds overweight is like smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Right. Or worse.
Or worse. And then if you don't exercise, it'll be 3 times a week. That's also like a pack of cigarettes a day. So she believes that over time, when the people finally get that being fat is really bad for your health, that it will then become politically correct to help people by commenting on their weight.
Like, it's true, like we don't already know this. Yeah, it is an odd thing, I have to say. At some point, they'll gang up on them. I mean, they gang up on everybody else, so their day will come. Yeah. Well, it'll be healthcare costs. That's what'll drive it. When the light is shining on the morbidly obese as the drivers of healthcare for other people's.
I mean, the most difficult thing as far as healthcare is weight. I mean, that is the biggie, at least in the United States, right?
It's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not going to stop until the food that's available to most people changes. I mean,
well, do you think there's like they tax cigarettes? You know, tax burgers.
Gavin Newsom is taxing soda right now. Which I think is a great idea. Did you hear that?
Yes, it's great because it is a big contributor towards obesity. So it's proven in study after study.
For example, you tax cigarettes for cancer research and you can tax, you know, like McDonald's burgers
for and obesity research
and things like that. I mean, sure. It makes sense.
Why not?
Yeah, definitely. Anybody who puts like, you know, high fructose corn syrup in their food should be taxed, and things that are just known to be terrible.
So the question I have is if marijuana gets legalized, which I think would be a good policy.
Yes, I agree.
But as we all know, marijuana can give one the munchies. So
that's true.
The question is, I hadn't heard that.
I wouldn't know what you're talking about.
But the question is, does that lead you toward healthy food, or just, you know, what kind of food does that drive you toward? Does that drive you toward
any food?
You know,
what's in the cupboard? I mean, have you ever seen, like, I had a friend who wanted to start this company called Food for Stoners by Stoners, and it was like all these bizarre recipes of like anything, pickles and peanut butter. Actually, you know who it's in common with is women who are pregnant. Like in their second trimester,
right?
Stoners and those and women who are in their second trimester could eat from the same menu.
You're eating for two, except
one's
ethereal.
I actually took a girl to the hospital for eating chocolate, cheese, and ice cream all at the same time. She was stoned. Overdid it, just too much food.
Too much food.
Yeah. Wow. So that is one negative consequence of marijuana. You can overeat. Absolutely. But if they tax it, it's another, I mean, it's funny that how economy drives everything. I mean, everybody's really moral until they're going, oh, well, we can make some money on this deal. Let's tax it.
But, you know, and I might get in trouble here. I don't know if we should talk about politics, but I was listening to Meg Whitman being interviewed the other day. You know, she's a very successful businesswoman on eBay and everything. And, you know, she's saying
something. Tell people she's the CEO of eBay.
She was.
Yeah, okay. she's running for governor, right?
Yeah, she's running for
governor. She's throwing her hat in the ring for governor. Along with Jerry Brown. And Gavin Newsom, right. it's gonna be actually a wild election.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, you know, she's coming across with all these just, you know, cookie cutter middle of the road Republican answers, you know, and she's, you know, I want to cut taxes, I want to do this, I want to do that, and then the interviewer says, well, what's your stance on you know, legalization of marijuana, because that could be a good revenue source in these bad times, and, you know, of course California is, you know, a place where it could be.
It's almost legal. Anyway.
Right, right. Well, she says, well, my stance on that, it's illegal. And my stance is that there's all this abuse on with these marijuana clubs, and I'm going to clamp down on that. It's like, come on. You know, at some point, we have to get someone in there who's economically conservative and has some social liberalism in their body, right?
Well, she's a fool. And she did crap for eBay. She actually drove eBay. She's the reason that a lot of eBay sellers like abandoned eBay.
Is that right?
Yeah, because of the policy she implemented. She's, in most people's estimate, like long-term eBay people are the reason that for the downfall of eBay. So, I mean, she did a few good things, like the PayPal thing happened under her watch, but most people agree that things went poorly under her watch. So that's not really a rave review for becoming governor.
And by the way, you know, the thing that's probably going to sink her, ironically, is the fact that she didn't vote for several elections, right? That's what everyone's focused on. Oh my gosh, she didn't vote. How could she run a state?
That's right. No, what was it? Like, she didn't vote for 10 years or something?
I'm a Jerry Brown fan. I'm a Jerry Brown fan, not because Linda Ronstadt, but.
I don't understand.
Explain your reference to her.
They used to date. Linda Ronstadt and Jerry Brown used to date.
Okay.
But
I was like born at that time.
It's all guys who don't know this kind of thing. But what Jerry Brown did for Oakland was amazing. I mean, I think he did a great, because Oakland,
for our non-Bay Area listeners,
Oakland is a big town, a big city across from the
So I'm going to get on my soapbox.
I think they probably knew that part.
Let me get on my soapbox. Okay. What this country needs is more Peter Schiffs, right? We've got this polarization where we have this coupling of social conservatism and economic conservatism on one side, and social liberalism and economic liberalism on the other side. What we really need is a blend, right?
I agree.
We need economic conservatism because, you know, we're spending money we don't have, but we also need social liberalism.
We have the printer.
I mean, get real. I mean,
liberalism. I mean, we have a anti-socialist German here.
Yep.
and the only two people I know that have lived in socialist country are Andres
and Lisa.
And Lisa, my wife, and they both think it sucks. Maybe that's why they left.
No,
I don't know.
The problem is, he said elements. See, that's a black and white thing. I mean, the implementation of socialism in most countries who are socialists, I would not want to live there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't elements of it that doesn't mean the whole thing is bad. Like, you throw all of it out, and then, I mean, that's not very bright thinking.
So what's the good part and what's the bad part, Sean?
Well, okay, let's not even talk about socialism. Let's not put labels, because God knows labels just throws the whole, takes the whole, you know, train off the track.
So if you were president?
Well, no, what I would do is give a crap about people, first of all. Like, are we socially conscious? Like, it's like ethical capitalism. That doesn't have to be an oxymoron.
Exactly.
We can be thinking in these ways. We can take care of people, as opposed to what we've been doing, which is, who gives a crap? If you can't, you know, the haves and the have-nots, and people who don't have, sorry, you're screwed. Is that a good way to be? Is it for the richest country in the world that everybody looks up to? Is that the right way to be? I don't think so. And it's not a country you can be proud of, because we piss. If you, you know, you want to judge a country, look at how they treat their poor. And they're old.
Now, how are you going to treat, like, elderly? India, where, I mean, there's lots of poor. I mean, it's also a social thing.
I'm still saying, it's, look at a country, look at how they treat their elderly and their poor.
Yeah.
That's how you judge the character of a country.
That's one point of view.
That's my point of view.
Well, I'm saying that in India, I mean,
so should we just throw people away when they're under the line, you know?
I mean, the caste system totally sucks, right? I mean, India, like, okay, the...
I'm not suggesting that as an alternative.
Right, let's go back to my point. Don't you think that there's a possibility that economic conservatism and social liberalism can actually coexist?
Well,
and that's a completely overlooked coupling in our society that's causing great harm?
Well, there's a point counterpoint here, right? One of the things I noticed, I was probably
respond to his question though first.
No, and I am. I used to be obviously really, really far left. I mean, total socialist, communist in school, and that kind of thing. And then
edit that.
and then I, you know, but I started ROTC, so I was like the other end, and then we kept
going
back.
Dude, man, you must have taken some seriously strong drugs in the 60s. You were like yo-yoing all over the place.
I went from ROTC to a communist.
You could find him punching on himself in his dorm room.
I mean, I know they tested Agent Orange on like the soldiers and stuff, but I didn't think they did on ROTC candidates.
No, it wasn't ROTC candidates. So I actually played drums in ROTC. I was in ROTC. It's hard to believe. But what happened is I started becoming more and more, you know, liberal in a way. And I kept going more and more to the left. And I started, then I started figuring out if you go far enough left, you end up right, as crazy as that sounds.
No, yeah, that's true.
Because what happens is you say, what percent are you responsible for? Well, you say, if I'm responsible for, in fact, when I, this has, this
you end up fascist.
This is actually a good way to hire people. And we're going to segue a little bit to a business success tip. If you look at the bell-shaped curve of humanity, mm-hmm. you got people on one end that are psychotic, that no matter what happens, somebody else did it to them. They have 0% responsibility victims. For their life, right? Victims, 100% victim. I killed my wife with a machine gun because the devil told me to do it, or whatever, extreme. The other extreme is take 100% responsibility for everything. If you're standing out there and it's raining, you wipe it. Your life is a dream. You create your entire reality. There's nothing that you haven't created in your life. Those are like two polar extremes, right?
Right.
Now, I believe when you're hiring employees, hire toward the self-responsibility side. So when I work with companies, I say, well, if you find that the more responsibility a person takes for their life, in general, the better employee they are.
That's true.
So if you say, why'd you lose your last job? The wrong answer is my boss was an idiot. The best answer is I obviously wasn't responding well to my boss. It's the same situation, but it's different.
So how do you test for that? What questions do you ask a prospective employee to find that out?
Well, when you ask them about, there's victim kind of language. Victim kind of language is a lot of you stuff. Well, she did this and he did that, as opposed to I stuff.
Right.
So if they've got a lot of, you know, somehow
taking personal responsibility.
Somehow the world did it to them.
No, like, I understand conceptually, but what I'm saying is give me specific examples. So you're interviewing me.
Okay.
Give me some
specific
questions.
I'll say, Steve, What happened to your last job? Why did you leave?
I left because my boss just didn't get it, and I couldn't work for
him. Okay, so that's not responsible.
Right.
What's a responsible answer?
I left because I couldn't figure out a way to get my boss to do the right thing.
Okay, that's a responsible answer. I noticed you're divorced. I can't say that. What happened to your last marriage?
My wife was a complete bitch.
Okay.
Just for the record.
I'm buying it.
For the record, I've been married to the same woman for 17 years.
Okay.
She's a wonderful woman. This is all theoretical.
It's all theoretical.
All right. That could be my answer.
I never had an opportunity to say that. So
there you go.
Catherine is a wonderful woman. I can attest to that.
Okay. So, and what's the opposite of that? Well, why have you got a
divorce? I failed as a husband.
Now, see, I would say that's victim-y. That's a clever victim going, yeah. Obviously, yeah. I'm an asshole. That's being a clever
really?
Victim.
How did I fail as a husband make you a victim, though?
Because
you're taking responsibility. It was my fault.
Yeah. For me, it's woe is me.
No, oh, it's still
me,
a victim.
Sure. You're sure.
I'm such an idiot. I shouldn't have done what I've done. That's still being a clever victim.
It's also like way TMI. Like, too much information,
but it
man.
Is a victim, right? You are a victim. So try again.
I didn't help my wife as well as I could have through certain situations.
And okay. What I would say is...
And is it appropriate for you to be asking me this during a job interview?
No. That's right. Yeah. And what is your sexual orientation?
How old are you?
How old are you and how many kids do you have?
Are you or have you ever been a member of the Communist
that's
Party?
That's right. No, only the government can ask that. So when you're there, a question like, well, obviously... I either chose the wrong, you know, there's three problems with employees like relationships. Either I chose the wrong person and I chose this person. They were trained and I didn't know how to train them, which is I didn't make a relationship work with my wife. Or third, they're not motivated and I didn't supply any motivation. So in that sense, my wife and I didn't make it and we both gave it a good shot. It just didn't work out and I'm sure she's fine. I'll try again. So that's not being a victim.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. Sorry. Gotta do it. Quick break. Talk from our sponsor. Some sort of product they're gonna sell you. I'm sure that you should buy because
Viagra.
Yeah, whatever it is, buy it. and we'll be right back. And we're back.
Okay,
Paul was saying.
I was saying. So when it,
you know, you still haven't given me good real world interview questions. That's what I'm asking.
Real, okay, real. It's
yeah.
It's
I mean, and you don't have to peg me with them. You can just tell our audience some of the things.
Well, it's have. When you ask really, it's I was, you know, what did you like best and least about your last job?
Okay.
What did you like best and least about your last employer?
Mm-hmm.
What are your biggest strengths and biggest weaknesses as an employee? What's your favorite movie? I mean, you can get interesting, but when people say, what'd you like best and least about your last job? If they say, well, I really liked the boss gave me an opportunity to move forward. What I liked least about it was that I wasn't compensated according to my efforts.
What I feel I'm worth.
Right.
Maybe.
So, but you know, this is going to actually cycle back to your original question politically.
Yeah.
So if you go far enough on the left, you get more and more liberty, take more and more responsibility. Sooner or later, you go, if I create my own reality, and I believe that everything in my life is a result of my behavior, my actions, in order to change my life, I have to change my actions. Then you look at somebody who's a poor person or, you know, or whatever. There's a party that says that person has somehow created that in their life. So that is a very right-wing kind of thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and then you can say, you know, that I should take care of that person, and it's good to give, and I get from giving. That's a liberal thing to say.
Well, yeah, but let me bring this back to politics again. So, again, we have this dichotomy of liberal and conservatives.
Right.
Liberals and conservatives. And what I'm saying is, isn't there something that's in between? Isn't it theoretically possible that there's something that's in between? I don't know how this applies to business. I just thought I'd ask the question. Where you can believe in Adam Smith-type economics, yet you can also believe in social responsibility and doing things like saying it's okay to legalize marijuana because it's no worse for you than... Because right now, if you talk to a Republican, they'll say, well, we could never legalize marijuana because... It's illegal. I mean, that's right. Literally what made women
and
say, right?
Sure, the alcohol is worse. They tried prohibition.
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, bad answer, right? So what's the problem with society whereby we can't have that blend of economic conservatism and social liberalism? Why is that not happening in society?
Because everything devolves because of politicians, and everything devolves. We're not doing things based on, you know, thoughtful, open-minded practice. It's all based on sort of these jingoistic catchphrases, and I mean, I think it's very superficial the way that our politics are run in
this
country.
That's true.
Most politics are that way, to be fair, across the world, but we're particularly bad. And so that's what it gets boiled down to, is everything's a soundbite, and you know, who can spam the most ads on TV. I mean, there's actually an organization right now that's out there saying that carbon's good for the planet. I mean, like, right. If you have money, you can convince people of anything.
Well, isn't it like a popularity contest. I mean, when you think of this, is sort of why, you know, the founders of this country weren't really democratic, and they said, well, the masses are okay, but the intelligentsia has to like run it, so we have the Senate and the House and blah blah blah.
But keep it. What's the difference between the founding fathers and politicians? Is that they weren't actually elected, right? But until they came into office as Jefferson and Adams,
right.
They weren't at that point. They weren't elected officials.
No.
And as such, they didn't have the motivation that all elected officials have now, which is to get
elected.
Lobby money?
But election you know. Is based on a popularity contest. It isn't based on anything else.
Right.
Right. If you're in a democratic society. And the premise of that, it gets back to the is those people, the masses, can make the best decision for themselves. That's an assumption in democracy.
And also individually, if we're all acting in our own best interests, and you let the system work, then society will be better off, according to free market economics.
But I would make an argument that a lot of people don't act in that. I mean, you've got people that are out of work, you know, that are voting Republican. Sometimes people do not vote in their best interest.
Right, but I mean, in economic terms, if everyone's out there trying to make as much money as they can, they're trying to maximize their economic value, they're acting in their best interest in that sense.
Right.
That's pure capitalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what can work.
Right. And the theory is in pure capitalism, and that comes back to, I'm going to get a little diversion here, is that if the corporation, there's a we talked about the movie called, I think it's called The Corporation, actually,
mm-hmm.
where that corporations that now pretty much control the planet are soulless beings with no conscience. that they're just about profit, and they don't, even the CEO and the board of directors is more concerned about making profit than
helping
people.
Well, it would be okay if they were only about profit if they didn't influence public policy. Exactly. The biggest issue is that they're influencing public policy.
That's right.
You know,
that's the problem. I mean, they have more control than anyone over. And it's corporate lobbies are the downfall of this country.
It is. I had a conversation the other night where with a politician, by the way, a local politician. We had a long conversation. At the end of the night, I said, you know, really, the root of it is lobbying is the root of all evil.
Yeah. You know? True words.
You know?
Well, it's the golden rule. The person that has the gold makes the rules.
Yeah. And it's like one of those things they say, you know, well, how's that working out for you? Well, how's this working out for us right now?
Well, actually...
Not working out too well, I don't think.
Well, actually, compared to other places on the planet, we're doing better. I mean, it's a country.
We're getting leapfrogged. As we speak, we are getting leapfrogged.
By whom?
Who are we not getting leapfrogged by right now? Most of Europe is Poland is leapfrogging us right now. China, India. I mean, should I go on? Countries that were living in dirt like 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago.
So you think their standard of living is higher than our standard of living?
It's relative to their masses and what they're carrying and how quickly they're moving. They are kicking our asses right now on a graphed basis.
Well, it's a lot easier when you have it's just like when you have a company, to get to the first millions, not too tough, but get to the next 10, it becomes progressively harder the higher the standard of living is.
The hard numbers are backing you up there, Paul.
You hit a regressive stage. So we've hit a regressive phase in our evolution as a democracy, unfortunately. And it's pretty easy to enumerate the reasons. It's too much business and government is one big one. But we've just hit this regressive stage. We've surpassed this golden era. And the only way...
Every country does it.
It does. But the tragedy is that we're well-informed enough now that there are certain people out there that actually understand this and know the answers.
Yeah, we can do
it's
it.
It's just taking action is the tough
part. It's just action. I mean, yeah. It's ridiculous that we're not maintaining that position because we're fully capable of it. And we're fully capable, I believe, of staying on top for, you know, the foreseeable future forever, really, if we don't lose our way as we have. We need to regain our way. We need to use, but everybody is looking out for themselves so much that we have completely lost our way.
But when you
look at the root of the world,
as far as I know, is trying to copy our standard of living.
They're not trying to copy our entire socioeconomic structure, though.
If you look at, to me, the I'm going to call it the dis-ease of consumerism, which is really screwing everything up, in my opinion. Everybody needs more stuff.
Okay if you make it yourself.
We've been driving that whole thing that more is better, more is better. And that's not sustainable, period.
Right.
Right.
And we passed that disease onto the rest of the planet.
And saving all your money isn't good either, like Japan does. They've shown us that over the last 20 years. But there's, you know,
as a Western culture, the addiction to change, which you talked about in another podcast, it's not sustainable. And when you look at, I was talking to Lisa about the other day, and I said, we were talking my quest for spirituality, and she goes, "Why don't you just mail out for 2 years and be happy the way you are?" And I thought, that's an interesting concept.
I did that from like 2004.
You know, as opposed to constantly seeking to be spiritually better or to make more money or to somehow change your life. You have to, you know, more is better,
sometimes
different.
You do have to check in and say, who am I, where am I, I'm going to enjoy it, or just be where you
right.
are.
Right, the idea of like driving. Being okay with whatever you're at, wherever you're at, as opposed to constantly moving forward.
She's a very wise woman.
Yeah, but you can move sideways too. You can say, you know, let me get out of my comfort zone. I'm not necessarily shooting for the moon, but I'm going to stay a little bit out of my comfort zone. Because people who get a little bit out of their comfort zone tend to stumble upon really good things at times, right?
It's a motivating factor. Yeah. Well, we need to wrap this episode up. Paul, do you have any parting words of wisdom to our business tip-seeking contingent?
I would say, as employers out there, hire people. The more responsibility they take for their life, the better. And remember, the number one employee in your own business is you. So that also applies to yourself.
Well, thank you, everyone, and we hope those of you who have tuned in today for the first video episode.
Cheers.
Right? Yes, cheers.
Here's to our audience.
Cheers, and here's to our audience. See you next time.
And there it is, another episode of Business Success Tips. Thanks, as always, for joining us. You can check out our website online at businesssuccesstips.org. Send us an email at friends@businesssuccesstips.org. Or if you're a Twitter stalker, find us at twitter.com/BST podcast. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.
Hey, this is Sean Daly, and I hope you'll join me at Tech Exec Casts, a bi-weekly technology podcast where I speak to top executives from tech industry leaders and innovators to find out their perspectives on the industry and their secrets to success in the marketplace. Show guests include executives from top social media and social networking companies, internet marketing firms, enterprise software developers, and more. Search iTunes for Tech Exec Casts, one word, or go to www.techexeccasts.com.